When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Rob Vanstone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Rider Rumblings video podcast. I'm here with Murray McCormick, a Leader Post football writer since 1903. And, well, it's quite the eventful past few days. So many topics to address. There's Garrett Marino, and then the Riders are 4-1, which seems to be an overshadowed by the Garrett Marino mess. We'll talk about the nuts and bolts of football a little bit into the podcast, but I mean, the freshest news right now is that Garrett Marino has received a 4-game suspension from the Canadian Football League for that mess that occurred with just under 5 minutes left in the game on Friday. What do you make of the suspension, Mur?
I don't know how much more they could have done other than throwing him out of the league. I think 4 games is pretty big in the CFL, considering they only play 18. I kind of like the way it's structured. It's almost not appeal-proof, but it is, makes it tough to appeal the whole package. They can appeal a number of ones. I somehow think once the CFLPA gets through this, and they've got to appeal it, or they will appeal it, it might be down to 2 games by then. Nothing based on just on what's happened with them. But the CFL had to do something. What Garrett Marino did on a Friday night, just absolutely, and I'll use tainted the game in more ways than one. It was a dirty shot. Like, I could accept him hitting, accept is a strong word, see when he hit Mazzoli at the legs below the knees and he drops into the ground. It's the twist that bothers me that he does there. I don't know if he may have hurt him before that, but that little twist, this one, that's disgusting. And, you know, there may have been a time you could have gone off the field flexing and blowing kisses and doing all that stuff in the CFL and some of the I think you called the mouth breathers at the Rider game, cheered that, but there's no place for that when a guy gets hurt. And Garrett Marino has a track record, not a very good one. He's a great player, though. Is he a good guy? I don't know. We've talked to him once, and I remember that interview was just probably one of the worst interviews we've ever done on Zoom with him. He was just totally uncooperative and didn't know what about it. So we kind of lost him on that. So, Rob, I think it's really overtaken everything right now, and I think the league did its best. I don't know, Rob, but what do you think, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised because I thought I was maybe the league has conditioned us to accept or expect an underperformance. But I thought maybe 1 or 2 games. There was talk, you know, Drew Remenda and Jamie Nye were talking on Monday on the Green Zone, and they were talking about because Marino didn't have a track record in terms of suspensions. Would there even be a suspension? They made an interesting case or an interesting argument about maybe the CFL just won't suspend him at all. So with that as preamble and sort of feeding into my preconception that the league would not do anything, even hinting at draconian, to hear 4 games was you don't want this to ever happen. And I can't say, you know, you can't say that you applauded the fact that there's a 4-game suspension. I wish there hadn't been a cause to suspend or discipline anybody and that we weren't taking a 4-1 Rough Rider start and dumping it to the end of the podcast. But circumstances being as they are or were, I think 4 games is certainly warranted. And the break, the breakdown of the suspension was really interesting. The 2 games for the low hit on Jeremiah Mazzoli and the histrionics afterwards, 1 game for a tackle on an unspecified Ottawa offensive lineman, and another game for comments made about the heritage of Jeremiah Mazzoli. So, and that gets interesting too, because if Garrett Marino chooses to appeal, are you appealing certain elements of it then? Yeah. Are they building in certain blocks that make it tougher to appeal the entire thing? I wouldn't be surprised to see an appeal. I'd be disappointed if that were to happen. I think this should just be accepted and let's move on. But that hasn't been the history of things like this. We go back, not that there have been things like this, but that hasn't been the history of league issued punishment. We go back to the Simone Lawrence situation in 2019, where a suspension of two games was eventually whittled down to one.
Yeah. It's interesting. They're trying to send a message with this. I don't think football players need this kind of message. They know that's wrong. You heard the comments and you saw we wrote about them after the Rider players after the game. I've never heard players be critical of their teammate. And I asked that question. No one seemed to be going and digging them, but critical of a teammate, that's never happened. So they know that's wrong. They know, and I have to say, I think Garrett Marino knows you did something wrong too. Obviously, four games. So I just think, I don't think that's a message. Like, it's a message that says, yeah, if you do this kind of stuff, you're going to be hit hard. But I think, Rob, we've seen a lot of stuff in the CFL. I don't think we'll ever see a 90-second blow up by him, or how long it took him to get off the field.
Never say never in the Canadian Football League.
I know.
I think the message that is being sent isn't necessarily to the players. I think the message is being sent to the CFL community. It's being sent to the fans. It's being sent to the general public that this will not be condoned. This is a stain on the Canadian Football League. It's a stain on the Rough Riders. It's a stain on the brand, both brands. Yeah. And, a lot of people who wouldn't ordinarily be talking about the Canadian Football League are suddenly talking about it in this context. And, sometimes it is said that any publicity is good publicity. I don't subscribe to that in this case. And, I think a CFL sometimes is an easy target and unjustly so, but here's an example where people are looking at it and saying, okay, that's Bush League. And so the league had to send a message, I think, to the larger constituency that this will not be tolerated and that something had to be done. Now, does that stick? What does that suspension end up being once it's all said and done? I hope it sticks at four, but I can't really say that with much confidence or optimism.
I somehow think there's going to be more fines that's coming out of that game than just the suspensions to Marino prior to that. I can't figure out which offensive lineman. I watched it and a number of times fell on Robertson's ankle. It looks like that kind of was the catalyst of this. It kind of started all this retribution. But I'm not sure if it was Dino Boyd who fell on his ankle. Maybe you could tell because I couldn't tell through my angle. But Pete Robertson.
It's Dino Boyd whose name has been,
We all know that Pete Robinson is leading the league in sacks, is having an amazing start to the season, and has just been an amazing one of these guys. You just say, man, we're lucky to have some guys like him in the CFL. I know you did a good story on him, and he's a great quote, very thoughtful. But it looks like his ankle got caught under his leg, and that's how the break happened. And I'm not a doctor, and I'm just – because it doesn't really – so it started there. So I think some of the red-black guys are going to be in for suspensions and discipline. From the league because of what happened there. And that kind of was the catalyst to all this. And then Marino comes in and he grabs that offensive lineman from the back of the legs, kind of tugs on his leg, which looked like another cheap shot. I think that was the one he was also suspended for. So there was somehow one of the best refs in the league, Andre Proulx, kind of lost control of that game a little bit. You know, I'm not saying there's accountability for the players, but something happened there because Darnell Sankey posted a number of videos of things happening, cheap shots, back shots and stuff, and they weren't called. And I wonder, is there accountability for the officials a little bit in this game getting out of control and absolutely going down that to the road where we are today where a promising young football player is, you know, even if he comes back after four games, he's never going to be the same. He's never going to be the, you know, this up-and-comer. I was going to say, Garrett Marino, who was suspended four games for racist comments and stuff like that. So,
well, we don't know that racist might be a strong term.
Sorry. Heritage comments.
That term wasn't used by the league. We might be splitting hairs here, but the word heritage was used.
Nate Bahar said that when he said there was racist comments when he was in the bottom of a pile at one time. So I'm probably just sort of babbling away here, but I just think somehow something that game got out of control from everybody's standpoint, and Marino just went over the top, literally, And we ended up with this mess.
It didn't seem like a game necessarily for the longest time that was going to unfold that way. Yeah. I mean, there weren't a lot of flags being thrown. It wasn't a game that, at least to the our eyeballs sitting in the press box, it didn't seem like one of those games that was where things were percolating. I've been to enough junior hockey games over the years where you just know it's going to be one of those nights. The Rough Riders, who had been penalized so many times, 51 times over the first four games, were penalized only four times on Friday night. Two of them went to Garrett Marino. So it didn't really seem like it was building. But then Pete Robertson goes down, and then it starts building. And then you've got the mess that occurred before 55 left. You've got Red Blacks players walking across the field. And, I mean, actually, in a way, we're a little fortunate. They're a little fortunate that it didn't become worse than it was, because the players so greatly outnumbered the number of people who could have stepped in to prevent something from breaking out there. No punches were thrown. Mm-hmm. Harsh words were exchanged. There was some jousts here and there, but that didn't become a brawl. And as soon as I saw the Red Blacks players coming over, I thought, again, having seen as much hockey as I have and remembering the 1981-82 Regina Pats, I thought, okay, this could turn into a Donnybrook very quickly. And I think there should be an element of relief that that didn't happen, because if that had been a 20-on-20 or 30-on-30 brawl, we would have been seeing that one on SportsCenter for the next 30 years.
I wonder why there weren't any flags, though. Why wasn't Ottawa penalized for leaving its bench to go over to the Ryder bench? Like, just because maybe there weren't punches thrown? But that's another. I mean, I was kind of watching that again yesterday, yeah, thinking, there's not a single flag for this.
Again, there was some provocation. You know, that didn't happen in isolation. They had the Garrett Marino flexing. You had the Garrett Marino putting his arms in the air, blowing the kisses to the crowd at the same time that Jeremiah Mazzoli is writhing in pain. So the optics were terrible. And I think, again, you can't speak for the officials, and the officials aren't even in a position to speak for themselves, but there was that as an undercurrent. So,
I just want to mention a little bit of this.
I'm just glad that didn't turn into something that was even uglier in terms of a lot of confrontations near the Rough Rider sideline, because it certainly looked like that when you saw that army of Red Blacks players coming over, and they had a right to be incensed.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, there's the ugly side, but there also was the human side. I noticed that Larry Dean, who played with the Tiger Cats and good friends with Mazzoli, kneeled beside him for quite a while to make sure if his buddy was okay. Cody Fajardo ran out there.
Yeah, all that's going on, and Larry Dean is just right beside Jeremiah Mazzoli. That was so classy.
So classy. And Cody went out and pat him on the back too, just to make sure he was okay. So there was this, the whole idea is the ugly side of football, but there was this humane side that these guys, you know, they care about you. They're friends. They're former teammates. So I almost missed what Marino was doing, because I was watching Dean sitting there very quietly with a very good friend of his down on the field. I thought, that's a classy move. That's a very classy thing. So the ugly part of football, that absolutely, the Marino brought up all the ugly sides of football and everything you don't want to see in the game. But there was also opportunities there that we saw guys doing the right thing. Two teammates carry Mazzoli off. Like, that's out of a Hollywood script almost. The guy, one thing, he didn't come back and play. But we do know he's going to be out for a while, obviously, with that injury. It's not a torn Achilles, which was kind of thought it might be happening. But we'll see what happens with him.
Still 10 to 12 weeks.
10 to 12 weeks. And this is a team that needs a quarterback.
Yeah, now they're down to Nick Arbuckle already. I mean,
it's got to be something going on with that guy.
I mean, it's you know, from the Ottawa perspective, I mean, that they're 0-4. Now they've lost their starting quarterback. I mean, that could be another, you know, 2 or 3 win season for the Red Blacks. The predicament that they've been put in. I mean, they were going to win the game anyway, but. Yeah. And they're not a very good team. But now without Jeremiah Mazzoli, any hope that they had has been extinguished. And as for the Rough Riders, they're 4-1, but it's about as shallow a 4-1 as you could imagine. They've only been 4-1 12 times in a span of 75 seasons, but that 99 times out of 100 or 999 times out of 1,000 would have been the discussion, or a lot of the discussion after the game. But Craig Dickinson doesn't give out any game balls after that game. Yeah. And there was no celebration. He says that it feels tainted. And he spent most of his post-game media availability talking about matters not pertaining to the Rough Riders winning 28-13. And that's, the Rough Riders took that very seriously. And, you know, Craig Dickinson even said on CKRM on Monday that, and this was before the news of the suspension came down and before the Rough Riders had been advised of it, that they were going to sit Garrett Moreno down anyway for the Saturday game in Wolfville, Nova Scotia.
Should they add more? Should they pot add him, or should they just let this stand now? What should they should?
You know, that's a question I want to ask Craig Dickinson. I would hope that the Rough Riders would look at that as a supplement to the discipline already issued, as opposed to something that's just devoured by the four games that the CFL has handed down. Again, I don't know at this juncture. We're recording on a Tuesday morning, but. I would like to see the Rough Riders take a bold step in addition to what the CFL has done, because it's their brand more than any other brand that was tarnished by this. It was their victory that was tarnished by this in front of their fans, a national television audience, and it was an ugly look. And it's not what the Rough Riders represent. It's not what Craig Dickinson represents. It's a flagship state, flagship franchise of the Canadian Football League that is at the center of all this. And so there's a... The Rough Riders aren't merely 1/9 of the Canadian Football League when you look at the profile. And they are such a huge topic of discussion within the provincial borders here. And so it's that's got a life of its own. And that's the brand that has to be restored right now. Not restored, but it has to be polished a little bit.
Does this any comparison to what happened with AC Leonard last year? You know, his blow up at the... doping control. He got three games.
Yeah. I mean,
it was in private though. But we heard.
Yeah. Afterwards. I mean, nobody saw it happen. You know, the doping control officer was certainly, in a bad situation there. That was a one-on-one explosion. It was something that AC Leonard ultimately apologized for, but yeah, I mean, he ended up serving three games for something that on the scale of it wasn't even remotely comparable. That's a good point, Murr, because if you look at it, three games for that, if you're looking at three games cumulatively for that as a baseline, maybe there's a case for more than four games for what happened on Friday night.
Yeah, but you look, I think Dave Naylor made a point about that, how much one game in the CFL is like 10 in the NHL.
So it's like 10 baseball games.
Yeah, so it's a pretty significant. It's not a small chunk of the season to lose your guy for four games. So I still think, Craig Dickinson made some comments trying to defend Garrett Moreno on the if we can't call it racist, what do we call it? On some of his comments about how he has black friends and has a black girlfriend, and then surprisingly, Craig kind of walked those back this morning, saying they were insensitive. And he didn't show. What do you think of his comments today on that, Rob? Did you see those?
Yeah, I saw those. I mean, I think he did the right thing by going on Twitter and clarifying what he said and basically expressing regrets, or however you want to phrase it, about that. I mean, it just there's really no defense of this situation. And I realize he's very loyal to his players and is as supportive of his players as a head coach ever will be. But in that situation, I think it was a rare verbal miscalculation by Craig Dickinson, and one that he quickly went to great pains to address, which is how what Craig Dickinson does. You know, if he has a strategic error during a game, he'll often point it out before anyone can point it out to him in the media. And so it's Craig Dickinson being proactive, as it was Craig Dickinson being proactive by saying on CKRM yesterday, on Monday, that Garrett Moreno was going to sit out a game. And even before the CFL came out and said something. So that's a degree to which Craig Dickinson takes these matters seriously. He wasn't going to let it fester. He came out and said something, and clarified what he said and owned what he said and expressed his regrets. And, the wording was certainly not what one would expect from Craig Dickinson, but the accountability for it was certainly what you would expect from him.
I know this has nothing to do with that. How does the head coach of the Rough Riders only have 2,600 followers? Okay. Like, you have 11,000. Yeah. You would think that, but he doesn't tweet very much. So he's not as prolific as you. Maybe you could give him a couple tips on how to get followers, Rob.
Well, you gotta tweet about your dog a lot. That pretty much is the secret to it. Right, Candy? She's sleeping behind us.
I don't know if we want to.
Is there anything else that we should hash around on Garrett Moreno? Not did you have really. A cat named Marino?
I do. She's do. About as friendly as he is, too, to be perfectly honest. I can tell you many stories of Marino acting badly around me, including hissing and stuff. But she was named after Dan Marino. So, and I have another cat named Murdoch. We have two female cats with male names. It's okay. We pick the names for the cats. Anyway.
I'll ask you at a different time why a Pittsburgh Steelers fan has a cat named Marino. Although Marino played at the University of Pittsburgh, so maybe that all adds up.
My wife is a Dolphins fan. My wife is a Dolphins fan.
Okay. My condolences to your wife for various reasons. turning to football.
Football?
I think the Rough Riders are 4-1. This hasn't happened a lot. It never happened in team history until 1967. They've been 4-1 11 times. They've been 5-0 once. The 5-0 being in 2008. So not uncharted territory, but it's a rare foray into life at 4-1. Again, this has all been overshadowed. And maybe there's an asterisk to be put beside it too, because the Rough Riders haven't played a real opponent yet.
Exactly. They've loaded up on the East. The East has been there. I mean, they feasted on the East. How's that?
They could conceivably be, 6-1, 7-1. We won't know if they're any good yet.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, until they start. And then it gets really crazy.
Well, you 3 out of 4
against BC and 3 out of 4 against Winnipeg. And then 2 against Calgary right at the end of the season. I mean, they get the preliminaries over with. I think they got BC at the end of the month, and but until then it's Toronto, and so they should be 6-1 without too much difficulty,
and get used to back to backs too, lots of back to backs. Yeah, the CFL's done that scheduling like that, so that's going to be like they end the season with a back to back against Calgary.
It's almost like they have three hockey series this season. Yeah, you know, they got a best of three against BC, they got a best of three against Winnipeg, and then they got a 2-game total points against Calgary at the end. My goodness, this is going to get compelling. It's like they have to take these free spaces on the bingo card while they can.
Yeah.
But again, they could be 6-1 and they might not be anything more than an average football team. We won't know until they have a game that is reminiscent of last week when Winnipeg plays BC and Winnipeg sure made a statement. Or this coming weekend when Calgary plays Winnipeg. There hasn't been anything like that for the Rough Riders. It's been all East plus that mess that is Edmonton. Yeah. So how do you – they're winning the games they should win. The one they lost, I think there's every reason to think that that's excusable. But they could be an average team with a glittering record. Then we'll find out if they're a genuine 6-1 team.
That's given some props to what point. They have shown, Rob, though. Yeah, sure. Did you expect this kind of running game? I didn't expect this two-headed. I know you discovered Frankie Hickson early in training camp.
I did.
Yes, you
just
did.
Just like I discovered Kian Schaefer-Baker last year.
Yeah, you're the scout, the media scout. But that running
game. I also discovered Kevin Mason and Warren Jones once upon a time. So.
Okay.
And Todd Reesing and
Terrence Nunn. No, Terrence Nunn. I remember
him. Terrence Nunn. So Todd Blythe was another one of my, for sure. Stars. So,
but the running game has just been a revelation, especially the last couple games. Like the way that two-headed monster works with Morrow and Hickson has just been fun to watch. Hickson is an explosive kind of darting guy. That 63-yard touchdown run was just a beauty. And Morrow, I don't want to say he's a grinder, but he does grind out yards and he pounds through stuff. And I think things are going to be even better now that Mario Alford will start returning punts and kickoffs. These guys will just be able to focus on that great power game. So I really think the running game has just been outstanding. And I'm also going to drop another. Larry Dean has just been – he's been another great reason. What a great player. Imagine if he hadn't torn his Achilles. We would have known so much about him. But he's just been on a great linebacking core. He's been the best. And not taking – and then I don't want to take away from Sankey and Moncrief because they've also been outstanding. But Larry Dean has just been another revelation in my mind. He's a
year removed from tearing an Achilles tendon, and he turns 34 on August 7th.
Yes.
And he looks like he's 23 out there. He's leading the league in defensive tackles with 28. That's amazing. But I want to give some props to Natai Rogers. And you wrote a really good story on him last week. He gets a lot of flack for penalties, for his proclivity for surrendering sacks. He was involved in three blocks on the Frankie Hixon touchdown. So I think that has to be noted. Natai Rogers on that play, go back and look at it. I mean, everybody blocked well, right across the offensive line. Bruno Labelle, Albert Awachi, Duke Williams made a big block too. So there weren't many people on that offense who didn't have a role to play in Frankie Hixon going all the way for the touchdown. But wow.
Natai Rogers. Stutter step he makes to the side and goes through that hole. That was pure beauty.
That was Kent and Keith-ish.
That's exactly what I felt like.
Yeah. You know, and I still don't think Frankie Hixon has the pure jets that Kent and Keith had, because I don't think we'll ever see a running back like that again. But it's sort of Kent and Keith, you know, it's a facsimile of that, a very reasonable facsimile of that. And Kent and Keith could just take anything and take it the distance. I'm not sure that is necessarily the kind of back that Frankie Hixon is, but a 63-yard touchdown run, those haven't happened very often in the last decade. Marcus Thigpen has the other three, 75, 80, 82. Before that, you have to go back to 2010, Wes Cates with an 83-yard run against Edmonton. And so before that, the longest touchdown run during the regular season was 63 yards in 2006 by the immortal Shamar Bracey.
Ooh.
And
what year was that?
Then 2006. And then Kent and Keith had a 76-yarder in the playoffs that year. So we're going back 15, 16 years to find some precedence for what Frankie Hixon did on Friday night.
Look at the speed he showed in a role
where he's only carrying the ball five times.
Look at the speed he showed at the end of that run, too, by running away from the Red Blacks. I've watched that run over and over again. I just kept picking up things. I went, wow, is that great? Like, you're blocking the hole he had to get through there, the stutter step. And then the acceleration.
He could have chosen a couple of holes.
Yeah.
He could have gone left. He could have gone right. He chose the right hole, but they created a lot for him there.
Yeah. So I guess we'll probably head into this. We're on the road going east, as far east as you can to play. Well, I guess we go to Newfoundland, but that's more of another trip. Touchdown Atlantic. I'm not quite sure what Toronto team they're going to face. Is it going to be that team that lost by 1 point on a misconvert? Not lost, but could have tied the Bombers on a misconvert, or the same Argos team that went out to BC and got its butt handed to it in that. Oh, yeah.
Or it might be the combustible Argo team that.
On the sideline.
You just don't know. If Andrew Harris, excuse my dog, by the way, but she's being needy right now. If Andrew Harris has the kind of game that he had last week, that could dictate a lot of what goes on, especially with Garrett Marino out. Suddenly Pete Robertson is out. The Rough Riders defensive line isn't going to be personnel-wise what it has been. The Riders might very well be susceptible to the run there. And Andrew Harris could be the engine that gives the Argonauts some success, but still, that's a team they should beat. They don't have it's McLeod Bethel Thompson is a quarterback, and their record is what it is for a reason. It just doesn't look like a very strong football team.
Don't you think the Argos win that game if they hand the ball off to Andrew Harris to go for two instead of the safe convert?
Yeah.
I think they win that.
Absolutely. I think you got to go for two in that situation. And, I think you got to show that kind of confidence in your offense too. You tie the game and then you're flipping a coin in overtime anyway. Why not just say, okay, we got 3 yards to win a football game. And if you can't win a football game with a 3-yard play with the way Andrew Harris is playing, you probably don't deserve to be in the game anyway.
Well, it'd be an interesting thing. We're headed to tiny little Wolfville, about 5,000 people, 10,000 seat stadium. I remember back when they were doing renovations to BC Place, I covered a game at Empire Field in late October. That's when they had the outdoor field in BC. And I remember typing with gloves on because it was so cold in BC.
Oh, lovely.
But I have a feeling it's not going to quite be that way in Wolfville. But a big game for the CFL. I think it brings in more focus on the possibly be expansion and more selling the game to the Maritimes. A game they're hyping up quite a bit. They've got their number one crew on it from TSN, I think. And should be a lot of fun. I'm trying to think out, is lobster a reason to eat with butter, or is butter a reason to have lobster? I'm not quite sure
yet. I've only had lobster once, so I'm the wrong person to
I'm
ask.
More of a king crab type of guy, because lobster's a lot. I find lobster a lot of work for a little bit of meat. But I will try my best to try to do that and try some. I love scallops, and I have a feeling that some great big ones are going to be down there for scallop eating. And I think I have to work. Do I have to work sometime? I'm going to try to squeeze that.
You'll be slave. You'll be going nuts down there.
We expect
10,000-15,000 words a day from you.
And when we cross fingers, my flight goes through Pearson. And I'm hoping I've got like almost a 2-hour layover. So I hope I should be okay. But it's a little different world traveling, Rob. You're kind of lucky you get
good
to
luck
stay
to
home.
You and good luck to you in Nova Scotia, and good luck to your luggage in British Columbia. So
no check bags anymore.
that's a prudent move. Yeah. We might as well just get on with our day here. I think we've squeezed this tube as much as we can. So I'm going to read the obligatory message at the end with all the elocution that I can muster. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and a 5-star rating. It helps us grow the podcast. It really does. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to send us a question, you can email Rob, I believe that's me, at rvanstone@postmedia.com, and we will read it on the show. You can follow me, Rob, that's me, on Twitter, @RobVanstone, or Murray, @MurrayLP. And don't send tweets to Murray Mandrick that are intended for Murray McCormick or vice versa. That has been known to happen.
I'm chuckling because when I read the outro last week, I read it word for word, and I said, that's Rob Vanstone, me. And I went, oh.
Well, I hope you sought therapy after that.
I did.
Nobody should have to carry that burden. Well, safe travels, Murr. Good luck at Pearson, and we'll be nagging you incessantly for the remainder of the week, asking where's your story, where's your story, where's your story, exactly. And then get the next one done.
Okay. I'm looking forward to
for
it.
for the overworked. Oppressed Murray McCormick.
Yeah,
I'm underfed too. I'm the vacationing Rob Vanstone, and we'll do this again next week when the Rough Riders are 5-1. Take care.